From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The turmoil in President Trump's national security leadership is starting to get a little unnerving. Where a steady hand is most needed, we've got Michael Flynn out and lots of unease. Some Republicans say it's politics. Others are watching with dismay. The world is watching, too. This hour, On Point, the Trump administration and this nation's national security. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Is it too early to judge, too easy to be political? Or do you see our national security leadership in something like a shambles? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the president on Monday at a press conference with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau as the Flynn scandal was breaking open, the president talking about lots of security challenges around the world.
We have problems that a lot of people have no idea how bad they are, how serious they are. Not only internationally, but when you come right here. I mean, obviously, North Korea is a big, big problem, and we will deal with that very strongly. We have problems all over the Middle East. We have problems just about every corner of the globe, no matter where you look.
Yes, a lot of challenges out there. How's the White House doing in preparing, positioning the U.S. to deal with those? Here was Republican Senator John McCain. Of course, he's often out there, out front from the GOP, but he was talking with NBC News in Washington yesterday, saying turmoil in the Trump administration may be harmful to the nation's security.
I think there is significant dysfunction in the national security apparatus of the Trump administration. When you see that you don't know who's in charge, this Flynn situation, the whole environment is one of dysfunction in the Trump administration as far as national security is concerned.
We want to look at what's going on. Joining me first today from Washington is columnist David Ignatius, who covers national security and foreign affairs for The Washington Post. It was his January 12th column that forced the question of General Flynn's Russia contacts out into the public eye. He's watched national security and Washington intelligence issues for a long time. David Ignatius, welcome back to On Point. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Do we have a steady keel under national security right now?
To call this a steady keel would be wishful thinking, to put it mildly. We have a rocking ship. We have a series, as President Trump said, of crises ahead led by North Korea. I note with interest the recent story just in the last day that Russian jets have been buzzing U.S. warships again in the Black Sea as a sign of their kind of aggressive stance towards the U.S. So even Russia, the nominal subject of the close relations between Trump and Russia, is a problem. So I think they're going to quickly have to designate a successor to Flynn. I'm sure we'll talk about who that person would be. But this is a very disorganized startup for an administration.
I mean, and of course, the world rolls on. It reports of a Russian spy ship off of Delaware Tuesday morning. I don't know if that's normal or not. The New York Times saying the Russians testing a cruise missile that would be out of line with the U.S.-Russia agreements when it comes there. Russia denying that, but that out there. This report of an assassination of a half-brother to the leader of North Korea and the Korean missile test itself. I mean, the world rolls on while this White House works out the kinks. What about the pace of working out the kinks, David? Is this all right? Is this normal, or is something fundamentally different here from most incoming administrations?
I don't think anyone would say that the first 3 weeks of the Trump administration are normal by any historical definition. It's been very bumpy. We have had a president who was entirely inexperienced. We had a White House that had many different centers of power that often seemed to be in conflict. We had a president using this new tool of Twitter to issue disruptive messages that had the world kind of bouncing around, and now the departure of the National Security Advisor under a cloud, to put it mildly, and the prospect of continuing investigations of contacts between members of the Trump campaign, the Trump team, and Russian intelligence. We have the open question of what General Flynn told the FBI when he was interviewed soon after entering the White House. And was that FBI testimony consistent with what the record of phone calls that were monitored between him and Russian Ambassador Kislyak? Are there legal issues arising from that? And we have the larger question of what is it that Donald Trump intended to do with this issue? He kept it quiet in the White House, didn't even tell his vice president for 2 weeks. Was he intending to ride it out? Was he stopped from that only because of aggressive work by the Washington Post and other news organizations? Has he now made us the target? He seems to be now focused on the illegal leaks are the problem to the country, not these other issues. So we're in for a very bumpy period ahead.
You say in your column this morning in the Washington Post that the investigation of what you're calling Russiagate is just beginning. I mean, Republicans themselves, here was Republican Speaker of the House Paul Ryan yesterday, saying the nation's national security is too important to allow General Flynn to remain in the White House.
National security is perhaps the most important function or responsibility a president has. And I think the president made the right decision to ask for his resignation. You cannot have a national security advisor misleading the vice president and others.
Is it about misleading the very top of this nation's leadership, or is it about leaks? The president now tweeting about leaks, other Republicans as well focusing in that direction. Here was Mike Johnson, Republican congressman, Louisiana, on Morning Edition today with NPR. Said he wasn't as concerned about General Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador in that interim period between election and inauguration as he was that those calls had been tapped and then leaked by the intelligence community. That's the crime, he said.
The leak of highly classified information by what is apparent here, a number of individuals inside our intelligence community, is the illegal act that I think we need to review. It does merit further inquiry because we've got to find out if we have a problem internally. That could be a serious threat to the country going forward, and these are very serious implications.
David Ignatius, you've covered the intelligence community for a long time. What is going on here? Is it out of bounds? Is it even illegal that these leaks have come out? Do you see an intelligence community that's so worried or upset about, you name it, in the White House, that they're doing whatever?
Tom, there are a series of issues, and I think they need to be unpacked and looked at individually and carefully. First, the question of the surveillance of Russian Ambassador Kislyak, that would be routine as a counterintelligence measure. It would be covered under various provisions and warrants. When such a person's conversations take place with an American, there's a question of whether the identity of that American should be the term is minimized. In other words, it should not be disclosed to others who are reviewing that. So clearly, in the period before I wrote my column on January 12 about the Kislyak-Flynn phone calls, a decision had been made administratively within the Justice Department that the identity of General Flynn was important and should be known. How did that affect surface? I'm not going to discuss the details of that or any aspect of it, but it did surface. It's clear that the intelligence agencies have to brief a number of people about the work that they're doing. Those people, in this case, included the White House counsel, we now know. It included members of Congress. Congress is conducting its own investigation and requesting all of these kinds of files. So the idea that this is coming directly from Langley or the FBI, or I think people misunderstand how national security information is shared. It's shared downtown. It's shared on Capitol Hill. There are a range of different people who learn about it, and then eventually it makes its way to the press. So every administration I've ever covered complains about leaks. This one is complaining and complaining indignantly. The idea that the real problem here is people who thought this was being suppressed by the White House deciding to talk about it. I don't buy that. I think that that in this case, sharing that information so reasonable action could be taken about it, I think is absolutely in the country's interest.
Is there a real problem here that goes beyond General Flynn then? Or, you know, we had Jason Chaffetz, the congressman out of Utah, saying, hey, they're basically taking care of it with Flynn gone.
The simple answer is that we don't know the dimensions of this problem. What we do know is that our intelligence agencies, Director of National Intelligence, CIA, National Security Agency, joined together in a report that was presented to President Obama before he left office, in which they used very strong language in describing a Russian covert action, a covert assault using principally tools of cyber warfare hacking against the United States during our 2016 presidential campaign. That's a serious allegation. The evidence that supported in the unclassified report was very, very limited. But there is a classified additional report whose details we don't know. But members of the Congressional Intelligence Committees that have reviewed the classified report say that it backs up the allegations that were made. So what was the extent of that Russian effort, and did it catch up Americans, people associated with the Trump campaign, others? That's the subject that's under investigation now by both the FBI and the Senate Intelligence Committee, perhaps other committees. That's the subject that Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, has indicated deserves a wider examination in his comments over the last 24 hours. Mm. But the answer to your question, how big is it? We don't know. That's the whole point of the investigation.
Meanwhile, we've got all this turmoil. You've got people in the military talking about it as well. The world does not stand still. I mean, you've watched for a long time. Are we safe right now? Are we on top of things?
Well, we have a lot of crises in the world. Thank goodness. The United States national security system is strong. Our military is strong, well-organized. Our intelligence agencies, similarly. I think one thing that I am a little concerned about is the wariness as the military and the agencies watch this White House in turmoil about sharing information and people. The White House, the NSC, needs help from the agencies to have an interagency process. I'm worried about that getting kind of slowed down and discontinuous.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about national security and the Trump White House, Michael Flynn, the Russia connection, North Korea, the world's well, the whole world out there. It's plenty going on, as we heard President Trump say himself, looking at the readiness of this White House right now to defend the country. David Ignatius is with us, columnist for The Washington Post, and he's been all over these issues, what he's now calling Russiagate. You can join us this hour. What's your confidence level in this administration being on top of American national security? Are we secure here now? Questions still out there. Questions still swirling about who did what and talked with whom about what when it comes to Russia during the campaign. And before, here was Jonathan Karl of ABC News asking Sean Spicer, White House Press Secretary, yesterday if he could be certain that no one in the Trump campaign was in contact with Russian government officials before the election. Here's Spicer's response. Good luck with it.
What General Flynn has now expressed is that during the transition period, well, we were very clear that during the transition period, he did speak with the ambassador.
I'm talking about during the campaign.
I don't have there's nothing that would conclude me that anything different has changed with respect to that time period.
I don't know quite how to disentangle that. That's looking back, but it may have a big effect going forward, depending how this unfolds. And here we are. David Ignatius is with us from Washington. Also with us from Washington now, Ambassador William Burns, president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He was Deputy Secretary of State in the Obama administration from 2011 to 2015. A very, very big figure there and involved in all this for a very long time. Ambassador Burns, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Stanford, California, Cori Shockey, research fellow at the Hoover Institution. She was a director on the National Security Council in the George W. Bush administration, worked under the Secretary of Defense in the George H.W. Bush administration, senior policy advisor to John McCain in the 2008 presidential campaign, editor with now Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis of Warriors and Citizens, American Views of Our Military. Cori Shockey in California, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Corey, you've watched these things for a long time. Is this just working out the kinks, or do we have a problem here?
You know, up until a couple of days ago, my theory of the case was that this was a messier transition than most, but that it was basically going to be a linear process, right? As mm-hmm. the cabinet departments got staffed out, that power would migrate away from the most reckless people in the Trump administration, who are the ones in the White House and closest to the president, and responsibility for carrying things out would be done with increasing competence by the departments. And I begin to question that concept of the administration.
Why?
It may just be this may be what we're in for. It may just be, you know, oscillating inability to learn from their mistakes, inability to be honest about their vulnerabilities, increasing revelations of very profound compromises of important people in the administration.
You're our conservative. I mean, you're our guest who's worked with Republicans for a long time. Republicans on Capitol Hill are saying this is politics. All this complaining is politics. The problem is just the leaks. Everything else is fine. Thank you.
No, that's nonsense. Leaks in the American government are a natural act. They're part of the checks and balances of the system. People who feel like formal channels are not taking their concerns into account, or people who fear that their government is about to make a really bad choice and haven't considered all of the elements of that. That's when people start talking to the newspapers. That's when people go to Capitol Hill. A smart administration takes the process of leaks as a grade on how they're performing, not as a threat to the country.
Ambassador William Burns, you've seen a lot. Here we are. We're a couple of dozen days in. Republicans are saying, give it time, to study the boat here. But what about where we are and what you see emerging in the architecture of security issue consideration, contemplation, thinking in the White House, and action?
Well, I mean, this is as troubling a start as I've seen to a new administration in the 35 years since I joined the Foreign Service. As both David and Corey have said, there's a level of disorganization and indiscipline here that is really worrisome. And it's true there's an opportunity and the replacement to General Flynn to try to right the boat a little bit. But what I worry about is the deeper dysfunction because, you know, no matter who you appoint as national security advisor and whatever steps you take within the NSC staff itself, you still have a White House in which the lines of authority seem very unclear. And you still have a president who's, combines indiscipline with a lack of knowledge and experience on a lot of issues, who sort of sets the tone for a lot of this.
How do you see the rest of the world watching this and potentially responding? I mean, we had the North Korean missile test while the Japanese leader was in town, and that response on the terrace at Mar-a-Lago, which one of the guests there, you know, photographed, and so we know about it, kind of semi-public. Russia reportedly now testing or deploying cruise missiles that are not within the bounds of agreement. They deny it, but the report's out there. Could we get in trouble here? Could this moment be taken advantage of, if indeed it's a moment?
Sure. I mean, transitions are always hard. I'd be the first to admit that. But the international landscape today is particularly unforgiving. New administrations typically try to do a couple of things early on. The first is reassure your allies and partners, and the second is to sober your adversaries. And I think what we've seen in less than a month is almost the opposite of that. It's, you know, creating a fair amount of unease amongst allies and unnerving partners, while at the same time giving adversaries and potential adversaries a sense that there are opportunities out there. So I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, you've seen the Russians first, I think, spark an escalation in Ukraine. You've seen the news of the deployment of a new cruise missile in violation of the INF treaty. A number of the other steps that you mentioned before. And I think it's entirely predictable the North Koreans are going to test us or challenge us sometime soon as well. So that's why, you know, I'm especially troubled what I've seen over the last 3.5 weeks.
Corey Shockey, I mean, people are watching and wondering if this is okay. You've got Trump supporters. They're writing into us right now. Valerie writes to us. She says, look, why does everyone assume his presidency is flawed? There's more than one way to do things. And let's not forget, Trump promised to shake things up. So a rocky road should be expected. What do you say to this American watching this, wanting change, and saying, you know, cut him some slack, Corey.
Yeah, I'm quite sympathetic to that argument, right? Like, President Trump is, in many instances, actually doing what he campaigned to do. And people shouldn't be surprised with things like the executive order on immigration. But what the distinction I would make for the listener is that there is a difference between what you are doing and doing it well, and the kind of recklessness and indiscipline of the Trump White House so far suggests that they are having real problems trying to figure out how to get anything done in a purposeful way. And in fact, what they're doing is energizing the antibodies in the American system that will prevent them from doing a lot of things that they want to do.
What do you mean by that, Corey?
Lawyers reviewing executive orders, for example, is a good way to prevent yourself being overturned by the courts. And that evidently didn't happen with the executive order on immigration. Mm-hmm. So the mistakes that they are making, the process mistakes that they are making, have real policy consequences.
David Ignatius, we've got Secretary of State Tillerson in Europe right now, first foreign visit to the G20 foreign ministers meeting in Bonn. We've got General Mattis over looking, I guess, to sit down with and, I would guess, reassure NATO. Those sound like the kind of steps that Ambassador Burns is talking about with reassuring friends at the outset.
Well, I think a lot falls to these senior cabinet members, and I think the world is glad that they're there. I think American citizens should be glad that they're there. General Mattis sensible, experienced military leader as we've had, commands wide confidence at home and abroad, and I think importantly can act as a check, a force for preventing President Trump from making erratic decisions. He turned him around on the question of torture, as we saw. Rex Tillerson is new to diplomacy, but what I've seen from him so far I think is reassuring, will be to most people. I thought personally that the visit of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe to initially Washington and then to Mar-a-Lago in Florida was a good visit, and I think the Japanese took that as reassuring. I think it was an important signal that the anchor partnership the United States has in Asia is solid. I think Trump turning around his initial moves on China and reaffirming the baseline of U.S.-China relations is the one China policy. I think those are all stabilizing factors. Russia's a wild card, and I think it belongs in a separate category. And just finally, I was struck by the fact that both Corey Shackey and Ambassador Burns, two of the most sensible people I know, use the word indiscipline to describe what they're watching in the Trump White House. And that's really an indiscipline that begins at the top with the president himself, and then this disorganized and competing set of individuals below him. And I think having the right national security advisor, a prominent person who will organize in a way that's trusted, seen as fair, honest broker, style under President Trump is essential, in part because this person will discipline the president, much as Leon Panetta disciplined Bill Clinton when he came in as chief of staff, I believe, in late 1993, and really helped turn the Clinton administration around. It was a mess, and it became much more efficient thanks to the right person in the mix, and I think that's what this White House needs to do.
If we've got a run-and-gun president here, or indisciplined, if that's the right word, I want to look at what it takes to make that work and keep national security actually secure. Callers for all three of you, William in Santa Fe, New Mexico. William, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Corey has said most of the things that I was going to say, but I would like to say I don't think I've been a combat veteran, and I've been a Republican since 1968, and I'm now a philanthropist.
Okay.
I don't think he wants to learn. When he gets into a situation that is difficult for him, he goes to his own press or in his own base, and his history has said he doesn't want to do it And he has attracted the strong men like Putin and Netanyahu and the moderate leaders like Merkel, he dismisses. So I really don't think there's hope here, and I hope Pence is going to be able to have a lot of impact on the ongoing administration.
William, I appreciate your call. William Burns, what about a president who this Republican in New Mexico is concerned doesn't want to learn, has a view of the world and will act on it? I mean, everybody learns one way or another. How important is that process when it's the commander-in-chief? And is it enough to put good people around him? Can they compensate, as David Ignatius says Leon Panetta did, with some of Bill Clinton's indiscipline? Can that work with this figure in the Oval Office?
Well, I think it's a huge question. I mean, you know, one of my early experiences in government was pretty instructive in this regard. As a very young diplomat, I worked at the NSC staff in the late 1980s. So just as the Iran-Contra crisis at the end of 1986 was breaking and almost broke the Reagan presidency in its second term. And I watched as Frank Carlucci and Colin Powell, as the new National Security Advisor and Deputy National Security Advisor, came in, restored a sense of organization and discipline, not just to the NSC staff, but to the process with the State Department and the Pentagon. And then, just as importantly, you had a new chief of staff of the White House and former Senator Howard Baker who came on. And you had a president, I think, in President Reagan, who was sobered by the experience of Iran-Contra and understood what needed to be done in order to right his ship. And in a very real sense, I think, you know, Baker, Howard Baker, Carlucci, and Powell really, in a sense, saved that presidency. But it took a recognition on the part of President Reagan of what had gone wrong and what needed to be fixed.
Corey, does this White House leadership look writable to you with Steve Bannon as the number one at the side of this president?
You know, I have mixed emotions on this one. I did a study with Will Wexler from the Center for American Progress on NSC best practices, and we interviewed lots of former national security advisors and people involved in the process. And one of the main conclusions we had is that it almost doesn't matter how you structure the interagency if that structure isn't consistent with the president's management style. Because unless it's structured that way, the president's going to go around it. They're going to find kitchen cabinets, informal practices. And so in our judgment, it's best to structure the interagency in a way that suits the president's comfort in how he gets information.
What would that mean with this president?
But that's exactly the problem. It's hard to imagine how you would do that in a reasonable way that achieves the Panetta outcome with a president that seems very often at wide variance with his own administration. He's encouraged cabinet officials to take positions that he's diametrically opposed to, and that's a big part of the mess and confusion right now.
David Ignatius, who's on the short list for National Security Council chief here for the successor to General Flynn?
Well, General Kellogg is the interim person. He won't stay. He's been the executive secretary of the NSC. He does provide continuity and stability. The two big names that we've heard are Admiral Harwood, who was formerly head of the Navy SEALs, and General David Petraeus, a person well known to the country, prominent, a person who just in terms of the things that we've watched him do could provide a measure of order. I remember seeing the difference in the command area for ISAF, the international command in Kabul, after Dave Petraeus came in as commander. It looked like a different place. Just so physically, you see the sign that organized manager can make. Would this administration take Dave Petraeus? A big personality. How would he fit with someone like Steve Bannon? It's interesting to imagine that. Dave Petraeus has his own baggage, a legal plea that he made, which is an issue that would have to be sorted through. But it's really important that it be somebody, yes, as Corey said, who can work with Donald Trump, but also can discipline him. The point about Leon Panetta was that Leon Panetta was prepared to tell Bill Clinton no. When Bill Clinton called in the middle of the night, with some idea, Leon would say, "Go to bed, Mr. President," and that's what this president needs from somebody.
Ambassador Burns, we're going to a break in just a few seconds, but we've got potentially four more years of this probably. I mean, could we drift into a real national security crisis with this style?
Well, with this style, you certainly could because, you know, we're bound to be tested. There's going to be a crisis someplace. And if you have a process of making decisions and executing policy that it's as sloppy as it's been the last 3.5 weeks, we'd have a real problem on our hands.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about national security and the Trump White House, the readiness of this White House to defend the country. Ambassador William Burns is with us. He's president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace now, was very big at the State Department from 2011 to 2015, and for many years before that was number two there. The Trump administration, at least in the early days, barely listening now, barely contacting the State Department. Corey Shackey is with us. She worked very closely with the administrations of George H.W. and W. Bush, was senior policy advisor to Republican John McCain, the McCain-Palin campaign in 2008, has written with Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, who is now, of course, right at the top of the civilian oversight of the U.S. military. David Ignatius is with us from the Washington Post, foreign affairs columnist there, who helped put the whole General Flynn business right out in public view. You can join us this hour. What are you thinking about all this? After Flynn and the turmoil and calling audibles on North Korea over dinner at Mar-a-Lago, do you feel safe with North Korea's missile test and assassination, a Russian spy ship off our shore, Ukraine, illegal cruise missile deployment? Are we already seeing global response to an American power vacuum? And with Steve Bannon on the National Security Council, Stephen Miller in the thick of things, reports of chaos, does this country seem steady, focused, strong, ready to respond? Here was Kellyanne Conway, White House counselor, on Monday, standing up for Michael Flynn. Hours later, he was gone.
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president, and this is a big week for General Flynn. He's the point of contact for many of these foreign visits.
Full confidence? Nope, he was out. Here was Sean Spicer yesterday saying it wasn't really about what he did, it was about the issue of trust.
The job of the incoming NSA is to sit down with the counterparts and start that dialogue, and that's exactly what he did. So the question wasn't, did he do anything improper or illegal? It's the question of, could he be trusted further? And that trust, or the erosion of that trust, was frankly the issue.
Okay, but where does this go? Where does the discipline come in, the steadiness? Anne in Appleton, Wisconsin. Anne, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. The two words that I don't hear in all of the commentaries are the words treason and illegitimate. I don't think we can even assume that we have anything close to a safe democracy when it's very apparent that we have an illegitimate president. The entire administration wouldn't even be
What do you mean by that, Annie? He won the Electoral College. That's our process. He's in office.
I don't think anybody has any doubt except for the people who absolutely are diehard Trumpies that the intervention of Russia in this election to put him in the White House was what got him there. I think that if there was an investigation of his taxes, it would show his indebtedness to Russia. I think that is something that came out when they had to unseat his first manager. I have no confidence in the democracy, and I know that millions do not, until we expose this and really have a new election. And I know those are words that a lot of people don't want to hear, but this would be a perfect time for ISIS to attack us, because our entire country has, more than half of the country has been alienated, and I just do not feel that there's any reason that the president did not go into office to defend our country. The president went into office for other reasons.
And we've got the perspective. Corey Shackey, let me bring this one to you, because you talked earlier about the concern over, I think your words were, profound compromises within this White House, and I think you meant when it comes to Russia. What's the concern there? How do you see that? As, I mean, you hear Anne, she's ready to go straight to treason. But let's think about national security and the potential of some compromises, maybe even profound, as you suggest. How does that play out?
Yeah, I think Mike Flynn's firing is the beginning of this process, not the end of this process, because it does seem to me, as the caller suggests, that there's a lot that has not been accounted for in terms of Russian influence, in terms of the relationship between people on the Trump campaign and Russian intelligence officials. in terms of the very the odd reactions of people closest to the president about Russia. And I think it merits considerable investigation. And I am, but I disagree with her about the compromise of our democracy, because I actually have been heartened in the last several weeks at how vibrant media coverage has been, despite efforts by the president to intimidate the media, about how active the courts have been, about how active American citizens have been in what we stand up for.
Of course, where investigations go, we don't know yet. Democrats on Capitol Hill complaining that there hasn't been enough investigation there. Here was Maryland Rep. Elijah Cummings at a news conference in Washington yesterday. He's on the Oversight and Government Reform Committee.
We need to hold a public hearing with Flynn to get to the bottom of this. Our committee held three or four hearings, emergency hearings on Hillary Clinton in a matter of a week or two. And if there was any emergency at this moment in the history of this country, this is the moment.
David Ignatius, do you see congressional or other investigations gearing up here? The Department of Justice, now headed by Jeff Sessions, are they really going to go aggressively at this? Are Republicans in Congress, where they have both houses of Congress, really going to go at this? Maybe it just and the press is on it. That's clear. But where does it go?
Well, we're a sharply polarized country, so it's difficult to make confident predictions. But the Senate Intelligence Committee has agreed among its members that it will conduct a serious bipartisan investigation of the intelligence reports of Russian hacking during our election campaign. The consequences of that, the possible involvement of people in or close to the Trump campaign in that process. And they have talked with people in our intelligence community and law enforcement to make sure that they are prepared to support that investigation and are prepared to let it go where the evidence takes it. Jeff Sessions, the new attorney general, could order Jim Comey, the FBI director, tomorrow to halt that investigation. I mean, that could happen. And it's something that I think responsible members of Congress have been trying to prepare for, have been talking about this precise issue with people in the investigative and intelligence agencies. Like Corey, I am encouraged that we're a country that where the rule of law, the accountability mechanisms still work. Mike Flynn is no longer national security advisor. There was a process that involved people speaking up, FBI investigations, White House counsel involvement, et cetera. Similarly, you know, on the executive orders, the first is the travel ban, but you'll see similar litigation involving a number of these other executive orders, and the rule of law seems to be working. The thing that I'm focused on to conclude this is any attempt to subvert the rule of law, whether it's the FBI's investigation of the evidence involving Russian hacking, or to subvert the court process or intimidate judges in dealing with executive orders. That's when this gets more serious, much darker. And I think that's what we have to really remain focused on, any attempt to subvert the processes that, as Corey says, have been working.
Ambassador Burns, that's the domestic side of this equation, and that will turn on or perhaps it won't if there's not enough intensity there, or if it even subverted, as David says. But what about on the international side? I mean, the world keeps rolling and watching. And I mean, you've talked about this being a kind of crossroads for this administration structurally or in terms of people who might come in or people who are already there. I mean, Steve Bannon's on the National Security Council now at a deeper level than the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon. I don't know if the White House is yet really conferring with the Department of State. Maybe they are now that Rex Tillerson is there. Maybe you can tell us. But what about how this needs to how the teeth of the gears need to mesh for us to get back on an even keel here?
But two quick comments, Tom. First, I think structurally, like Corey, like David, I have a lot of faith in the resilience of American democracy, the way our checks and balances can work and the way the rule of law works. I do think the investigation into all the unanswered questions about Russia is going to be an important test to that, and we have to keep our eye on respect for the rule of law.
But Russia, North Korea, ISIS, they're not waiting around for congressional committees to do their thing.
Well, and that's the problem. On the international landscape, in a sense, you don't have those checks and balances. The check and balance for many, many decades has been American leadership. Not that we have solutions to all the problems of the world, but people look to our leadership to help make sense of a lot of problems that cut across national lines or particular challenges to regional security, whether it's by North Korea or Iran or anybody else. And if you have a period of drift and a period where, you know, the administration seems undisciplined and disorganized, where you have a circumstance where I agree with David, I have a lot of faith in General Mattis at the Pentagon. I think Secretary Tillerson brings a lot of capacities to the State Department. But you also have a situation where most of the senior positions there aren't filled yet, assistant secretary, undersecretary, deputy secretary jobs. And those are the positions that really make the machinery work and help to execute policy as well as shape it. And, you know, we're in for a period of 6 or 8 months, I think, before most of those positions get filled. And that makes us particularly vulnerable during that period.
Jeff in Tampa, Florida. Jeff, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Love your show. Thank you for calling, having me on the call.
Yeah.
In general, I'm just horrified on the lack of outrage, particularly Trump himself and the Republican Party. And what I mean by that is Trump knew the extent of the conversations that Flynn had with the Russians. He yet has been quiet up until the actual leaks. And his position is that the leaks are the problem, or the core problem here, where there is a lack of outrage from him and, in general, from the Republican Party on the fact that Flynn was doing things, whether it was totally illegal or not. And certainly, I think the American public in general would view those as very shady and improper to be having those discussions during the current sitting president, because they happened at the time Obama was still in office.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to feel unease about that. I totally get it. And yet, Corey Shackey, you and others are saying, well, you're heartened by what's going on in terms of pushback, oversight, challenges. We don't know how those are going to be depicted ultimately by President Trump. He's tweeting today about the leaks as the primary issue here. He's got people kind of out on the wings. You know, Alex Jones calling this a coup. This is very, that is, the wheels of Washington working against the elected president. You know, this can be characterized by Trump supporters in very inflammatory ways or righteously angry ways, I guess, if you're in that, you know, wingy camp. If the president starts resisting the whole mechanism of critique here or oversight and investigation, I suppose he won't. But he's talking leaks. He's not talking the other stuff.
Yes, I think the president's intemperate reactions to legitimate exercises of checks and balances in the American system is a cause for concern. And I think there is a lot of intemperate talk, both by his supporters and by his opponents, about what's going on. That said, I think this is a time for vigilance, a time to invest in good journalism. You know, we do have means, very strong, very resilient means, and people often underestimate just how resilient American democracy is. We're pretty good at solving problems over a couple of year time frame. And I think I see a lot of signs that people are already beginning to adapt to this new onslaught of a president who enjoys communicating directly and pungently across social media.
Stephen in Noonan, Georgia. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Just like say, like if God forbid there was a substantial terrorist attack or a severe international crisis, I'm actually more apprehensive about the reaction by a Trump administration than the attack or the crisis itself. I would be worried about the curbing of civil rights or, like was mentioned, the subversion of the rule of law. under any state of emergency imposed by this administration. I think George W. Bush struck the right tone after 9/11 by calming some of the more erratic fears. And I can't even imagine how Trump would handle something of that magnitude. It's just horrifying.
Let's just note that, Stephen. I appreciate your call. Ambassador Burns, while this works out, Khoryshchev says maybe over a couple of years, the rest of the world it doesn't just put its hands in its laps necessarily. I mean, where should we be watching out here for potential problems, whether it's ISIS or North Korea or China or Russia? What's on your mind, William Burns?
Yeah, I think all of the above. I mean, I think in some ways the most predictable challenge or crisis will come from North Korea. You know, they're making steady progress toward the capacity to deliver a nuclear weapon on an intercontinental ballistic missile against the continental United States. You know, sometime over the next few years, they'll have that capacity. That's a huge challenge. And there'll be tests in the short term. I think there's a danger of escalation with Iran, where any new president was going to face a tough challenge of implementing the nuclear agreement rigorously, but at the same time pushing back against Iranian threats to our friends and our own interests in the Middle East. That's a delicate balance. And, you know, you can easily end up with an escalation of tensions there. ISIS has been losing ground, I think, steadily in both Syria and Iraq, but they may see this as an opportunity to flip the narrative. And whether it's through, God forbid, a terrorist attack against the, you know, homeland or against, you know, America someplace else, to try to turn an overreaction into a kind of wider conflict between the United States and Islam, the sort of thing that Mike Flynn used to talk a lot about. So I think there are a lot of dangers out there. It is a very unforgiving landscape. We're going to be tested, and it's really important for us to be disciplined in how we deal with it.
David Ignatius, Rex Tillerson at State, James Mattis, General Mattis at the Department of Defense. Can they keep a steady hand on the tiller if the White House has got some challenges here?
The president is the commander-in-chief, and unless the president is prepared to steer this ship in a steadier, less impulsive way, it's very difficult for cabinet officers to make up that difference. The key transmission point is the president's national security advisor, who runs the interagency process. That's a decision Donald Trump will make, and from the decision he makes, we'll know a lot about whether he wants a steady ship or he wants to continue as disruptor-in-chief.
The whole world watching, you've all helped us a lot today to see it all. David Ignatius, Washington Post, Ambassador William Burns, Khoryshchev, our deep thanks to all three of you for being with us today. Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.